We're becoming like old hat at this point.
So can you tell me where that question was asked? What was
the name?
It wasn't my one.
No, it was just the stupid interview. The girl didn't know it. The movie name. She was just like sitting there throwing stupid questions out. She's like, well, why didn't you make it as a feature? It's like, God, you know, it's funny. We're having a barrel of laughs today.
So I've been budgeting a fellow columnist to come. She goes, she's being, if something happens to her when she comes up here, she suddenly, the air does something to her. She detoxifies from Los Angeles. She figures she's not going to do anything. You got to come
to this interview or this tonight?
Tonight.
Tonight, yeah. Great. It's good. Yeah, thank you. Are you coming again?
For third time?
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to ask, can you sit there again?
I'll go for last half.
That's right.
Get a dinner,
that's
and then we're going to do the Q&A.
That's
exactly what we're going to do.
Okay. Yeah, I like the last half. First half's hard.
The first half is hard. It's so...
The second half's hard, but in a different way.
It's not hard. The first half is only hard after you've seen it a couple times, I think. Because it is important information, but it is hard to watch.
Now, if there's ever a movie that... really would sing in terms of its extras on the DVD when that eventually comes up. This is definitely it. So I want to see a whole
throw the hair over the deck, right?
Chapter, a whole extra thing about your art show in New York and about your life. Just a little more than obviously than what you only had time to do. A little bit.
Something besides the case.
Yeah. Something about just life is about now. And forward.
That's what I'm looking into. Yeah, you know, it's so much different talking about something you've done or something you're doing versus something done to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
And I don't know a soul, myself included, who doesn't at different parts of the days think about things that have happened. And it's a lot of it's about forward, but this guy is completely forward, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Very, very healthy attitude. Do you agree?
Absolutely.
Or am I seeing the upside of your...
That's absolutely right. It feels like whenever we do have to go back and talk about this again, literally, I'm getting over a sickness right now where I had a fever of like 103, 104 degrees for several days because it was just...
We went That's to high. 103?
Yeah.
Really?
I was delirious. We went to Nashville for the screening there, and it was something just the stress of being in the South again. And I kept...
close to the...
I kept having this fear that I was never going to get out again, that it's just going to close over you like tar, and you're never going to get out again. And just the stress of that, plus... all the people that come up to you and start to, latch on to you, it drained me to such a point that my immune system's not in the best condition in the first place. So.
You mentioned in the film that your immune system has been weakened.
Well, think about it. I hadn't had sun or fresh air in 10 years. No human contact. I was eating absolute trash. Prison food consists of things like when you eat noodles, you eat plain white noodles. There's no salt, no pepper, no butter, no cheese. So noodles, rice, white bread. You're eating literally garbage just to survive.
Sugar.
Yeah. And then you add on to that stress, physical beatings. At one point, they had beaten me so bad that I pissed blood for about 3 days. So you put all that crap together and... I've only been out like 5 months. Yeah. I'm not used to this, and it's tearing me down a little bit.
Yeah. I was telling Jeff. I think I was telling you this last night, but I was telling him about how. Were we talking about the energy work? Was that last night?
The what?
His energy work that he does in prison, and telling him about how when you put so much work into staying sane and healthy. Mm-hmm. And then when it goes down, when the system goes down, Lori would, I remember you were so upset because he would go down for like a couple weeks at a time because he had no fight left in him. And I think that's so interesting because your energy work is like keeping your immune system.
It was really the only thing that saved me in there. It was the only thing I had, the only means of dealing with pain. Whenever they messed my teeth up, it was just excruciating agony. And that was the only thing that I had that I could do to keep from losing my mind from the pain.
And it's even amazing looking at your skin color right now. I'm just, just seeing you sitting
in a tan.
You're getting, you were yellow and gray when I first met you, and now you've got like pinks. And it's like, it's amazing.
But your natural color is to be a little on the fair side. You're not
Well, my family, I'm one quarter Native American.
Oh, okay.
So it would be...
Didn't know that.
So he gets kind of dark when he gets in the sun, okay. Believe it or not.
Okay.
But he's fair. Yeah.
But the yellow and gray was like the unhealthy look where you were just like so gaunt. Well,
the last time the lawyers came to see me before we got out, they said my lips were turning blue.
Yeah.
And they were actually scared I wasn't even going to make it to that hearing.
Speaking of people that are...
Hey, Mark.
Poor Mark is like...
Yes, good to see you.
How are you, man?
I'm all right.
Fine. Seems like I'm fresh.
So have you thought about going to a Buddhist retreat or something like that, just to see what that does?
I want to start doing some sort of martial art. I was looking the other day at maybe Aikido. I want to start doing something like that, you know, something constructive with my time.
Now, you told me at the party where we were talking to Alan Horn that New York is like some kind of natural center for you. You felt perfect there.
I never in a million years would have thought that I would have liked it. But then when we... And I didn't realize I did like it until we started to leave. You know, we went to New Zealand for like 2 months.
Okay.
And then whenever we... When you're sitting in New Zealand, I just kept thinking, God, I miss it. I miss it. And then as soon as we get back... You know, as soon as we go into the subway and you hear that voiceover telling you what trains are running, I was like, God, I miss that. Hearing that.
Yeah.
And it's not that I feel like I fit in there, but it's like I feel like nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, nobody even looks twice at you. Nobody has anything. Every single time I've been approached by somebody on the street there, every single time it's been positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
New York is such a welcoming place for, you know, everybody.
I love being able to walking down, say, Lower Third Avenue, and then there was always groups of four or five guys standing right in the middle of the street, talking excitedly, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't see that in small towns.
Yeah.
You know, you know, everybody has this impression, like, when you do come from a small town, everybody talks about New York like it's this, you know, dangerous place, and you gotta watch out or you'll get mugged on every corner. I have never... ever felt a sense of threat walking down the street in New York that I felt walking down the streets of West Memphis. Never. You know, you'll walk past, say, a gang of five black guys standing on a corner at midnight. You don't feel the sense of threat there that you do walking down, you know, say, behind Walmart in West Memphis.
Yeah, that's just
West Memphis.
I never knew what missing anonymity meant. You know, I just didn't realize how important it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, that's up to...
And I love going places where people don't recognize me, they don't pay me a second glance, and it's like, wow. You know, or going to a restaurant, someone doesn't come up and go, I know who you are, and I'm like, no, you don't. You know of me, but you don't know me. It's really a great feeling. I didn't know how bad I missed it. It's kind of like your freedom.
You're looking at me.
We were going to have you talk to Mark one-on-one.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
But, yeah, we'll bring you back in a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, come back.
Oh, we're doing it separately?
Yeah, we'll do it separately.
I love how they...
So why was it showing in Nashville? What was the occasion?
Sundance has started this new thing where they pick 9 films out of everything shown and send them all over the U.S.
It's called Sundance USA, yeah.
And ours was one of the 9.
Yeah, the only documentary they picked.
Huh.
But it was a great screening. There was so much passion in the room. You know, people know the case really well down there. So you've heard kind of different expressions.
It was definitely a different feel than Utah.
So can I be clear about precisely what the book is going to be in September?
It's going to be everything, actually. A lot of it. I kept journals the entire time I was in prison, so I probably have 20 journals full of writing from that, and it could be from anything. The journal entries themselves could be anything from day-to-day prison life.
Okay.
They could be what I'm thinking about that day, what I'm feeling about that day. It could be, you know, reminiscing about something from childhood. It could be something about the energy work. It could be about whatever I'm reading at that time.
Oh, wait, I forgot. I asked you this at the party. It just came back to me. And I said, would it be interspersed with narrative?
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
There's going to be narrative, journal entries, essays, and I think they even want to squeeze a little bit of poetry into it. So they're going to take a little of it will be stuff I've written now since I've been out.
Right.
A lot of it will be journal entries I kept while I was in prison that no one's ever seen before. And some of it will be straightforward narrative, you know, like I was born, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
When Damien was in prison, he had a book called Almost Home, which is, it's unbelievable. You can't really get it anymore because it's out of print, but some of that would be incorporated.
Right.
But we used a lot of, who was it, Jonathan Richman's wife?
Yeah.
Jonathan Richman, the singer, guitar player. His wife had recorded all these journal entries.
I used to call them every day. You know, he has a recording studio in his house. And for years, I called him every single day. And for 2 or 3 hours at a time, would read my journals over the phone. And they would record them.
So we used some of that in the film. They actually sent everything over to us. And we went and used some of Damien's narration in the film. Is their recordings from the journal entries.
Okay.
We did actually shoot a lot. We talked about the DVD extras. We shot a lot of amazing scenes from his childhood and things that, you know, you just can't get everything into the film.
I think they want to have a photo section too, just a section of pictures.
Oh, in the center of the book?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'll be great. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
The cover will be done by Shepard Fairey, the guy who did those Barack Obama posters.
Oh, yeah.
We went in. And
you know him?
I don't know him yet. No. I know of him. He donated like a something. I can't remember what it was. Was it a painting or something?
No, it was a lithograph, I think.
A lithograph. He had donated it to one of the things whenever they were trying to raise funds.
Oh, yeah.
To get us out.
Whatever his process is. I don't know.
So, and you haven't done that shoot.
We did the photo shoot,
and
they have to pick the which ones they want to use and send it to him, and then he's going to do something with the actual photo.
The reason I asked about the New York feelings, because didn't somebody ask you at the press conference, and you said we're not sure where we're going to, didn't you say?
Yeah.
So you have a different...
No, I just there...
It's so much money to live there.
Oh. No, and it's just, it's also about, in some regards, I think, just for security purposes and things like that, and we were a little bit concerned about that when Damien first got out, so we were trying to not kind of let people know where we were going to be, and just to be a little safe about things.
It's really brutally expensive.
It is really expensive.
I was there for 2.5 years, absolutely loving every second of it, but something happened. I went back to Los Angeles and I have a place here, and something just like kicked in. I said there's just as many crazy people in Los Angeles, and I get to ride a scooter around, and there's greenery and so I don't feel any spiritual diminishment from being in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit, you know, the energy levels, it's magnificent on a daily, you know, to just be in New York. You know.
Yeah. As long as you get breaks from it, it works.
It is. I lived there for 10 years.
Yeah. So I can't stay in. If I stay in the apartment a whole day, I have this feeling of I'm living in New York City and not even leaving this apartment. Why am I wasting this?
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts. Yeah. I have to at least go out and walk around the block or something.
When do you work the best? What is your best creative?
Early in the morning. That's when I work out physically the best. It's whenever I write the best. That's whenever my energy is at its peak, like right when I first get up in the morning.
You're so clear, too. I mean, your brain is so ready. Writing is
interesting. Yeah, I was just thinking that you should also write, you know, kind of a, this is the way to live your life, kind of a self-help book. Because everybody goes through traumas. Everybody has experiences. Feelings of, you know, confinement, or you're kind of lost or stuck in something you can't get out of. This is like the ultimate example of a,
seriously.
You know.
Yeah.
I really do think that that answered all that kind of stuff. What it all comes down to is having something in your life that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, something that you love so much, that keeps you going so much, that it aligns everything else a little bit.
Something like Lori.
May I say that that dress and your hair look really good together?
Isn't it? It's beautiful.
No, I like the color. Lori and I went vintage dress shopping today.
Okay. You found this?
Yesterday I found it. But we did. There's this great vintage shop on State Street called Yellowstone. They have such great dresses. And it's like in LA.
They're pretty nice men's stuff, too.
Yeah.
Through the shirts. But vintage shops in New York and LA are so expensive. They are so well priced. Anyway, it's kind of fun.
So I can't grasp that. Paying more for used clothes than for new ones.
Well, you'll see Laurie's new dress tonight. Yeah. It's fun, yeah.
So can you tell me what the other extras might be besides, is there going to be something on Damien and Laurie's life, or what's the plan?
I mean, for the DVD extras, I would think there was, I feel like some of those interviews with, like, Eddie, it was kind of amazing, and Natalie's interview, those were amazing. The concert.
Seth and Philippa's was really good.
Seth and Philippa was a great interview.
Yeah. I love those little vignettes you did.
Yeah,
the reenactments. She did, like, recreations of my early childhood days that didn't make it into the films.
Yeah. Oh, you could include an alibi portion.
Yes, and he wants me to put the alibi.
I was hammering her about you guys had alibis.
Yeah, everyone gave me a hard time the other night. Yeah.
So just... I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're going. No, we don't have to go. But you're watching the panel too, right?
Yeah.
So I want to give you some time with Mark too. So maybe. Okay. Maybe.
Why don't you just interview Mark in the car on the way to LA?
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. All right.
Cool.
That's just pull it out. Pull out the tape recorder.
Yeah.
He has a lot to say early in the morning. He gets up really early.
We're leaving at 4:30 in the morning.
To go.
Well, he's heading back, and I don't have a car. I've left my car down in Los Angeles, so I need to get down there somehow.
Yeah, so it's an early morning crew. And I'm thinking, like, some of the experts, like the forensics experts, were so interesting. Barry Scheck's interview was really interesting. There are just a lot of really great pieces that should be on
there. She has, like, between 750 and 800 hours of footage.
850.
Trying to cut that down into a 2-hour and 15-minute to a 30-minute movie.
Let me ask a legal question for it. And within the legal framework of Arkansas, is there what could possibly happen, say between now and when the film comes out or the DVD, that could possibly, I say possibly, result in the
exoneration?
Well, yeah, it was to say the actual possible perpetrator.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's not just opening the case up, it's actually convicting somebody else that you need for this exoneration. So you would hope that they would start seriously examining all the evidence against other people and hopefully, find the real murderer. That's, what you want.
Truthfully, though, I don't think it's going to happen. Because, the prosecutor says at the end of the movie, one of the big considerations for him was paying out like $60 million for lawsuits that we could file.
I thought by accepting the
Alford,
that meant he couldn't.
Well, that was their first question. Not only that, but their first question was, they forced us to sign waivers saying we wouldn't sue the state of Arkansas.
Right.
So if they reopen the case and convict somebody else and all this kind of stuff, then all that's up in the air.
Yeah.
Then, maybe there's a chance we could sue them for, especially if we come and find out evidence that they knew from the beginning. And I don't think they want to chance that.
Well, it's going to take an election year.
Well, and it is going to take. I mean, it's just like it's been all along. It's going to take people doing their job for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we continue to do their job, and then eventually, if we actually prove who the murderer is, prove it.
Yeah. They reap the
rewards.
Force
them into it. Yeah.
It's true.
It's the only way. They're
and
not
that's what the
it.
Whole thing has been. The whole thing has been you paying for them to.
Right. We always have.
Yeah.
Done their job.
Do their job. So it's just. Unfortunate.
Right now they're saying stuff like these new witnesses, they're saying that's like secondhand information or hearsay or something. All they have to do is go talk to Terry Hobbs' brother or talk to the nephew, and it ceases to be hearsay, it ceases to be secondhand information.
He was gasping for air when we went to confront Terry Hobbs' brother with the new information. He couldn't speak. He was just...
Yeah. What about when the in-laws sued O.J. Simpson on a civil?
Yeah,
why couldn't the in-laws of the children?
It's a good point. I mean, Pam has talked about it a number of times recently because it is a wrongful justice situation for her because now her son's murder is unsolved. And this, how long can the state rest on this conviction? No, it is a good question because she is still victimized by it.
That's a great idea. Come at it from every
I think it's a good idea.
Every direction.
You can't rest on something like this if you stop fighting for even a second. second, it gets swept under the rug.
Oh, yeah.
It what?
It gets swept under the rug.
Yeah, sure. That's what they wanted to happen.
It really does require so many people putting so much time and energy in because the state will put none into anything.
The manpower is massive.
Yeah.
Which is why we had to do the documentary. I mean, it's the only way that you... you know, could get all that information in a comprehensive start to finish. Okay, now I understand what happened, you know.
Did you, I thought there wasn't a single soft moment in the entire thing. It was completely tight, but I'm sure someone said to you, can you try a version that's maybe 140 or something like that? Did anybody say that to you? Was that ever attempted? You know, they'll sometimes just see what it looks like.
My producer makes really long films, so you ever seen Lord of the Rings? He's always so supportive of not having to cut it. I mean, I feel self-conscious about it because I know that with documentaries, people really want it to be under 2 hours because they're much, you know, heavier and they, you know, they leave you in a state. So
a couple of lightweight people that I know, yeah, and they told me they thought it was too long.
Yeah.
I said, come on, man. It's not... It is what it is. It's necessary. It's right, you know.
Well, you would be cutting out meat now. I mean, if you started cutting it any more, you know, even stuff like your, like you just said, the alibis. It's 2 hours and what, 30 minutes now? And there's still little things like that that you don't, can't go deeply into.
Right.
You start cutting even more out.
But I feel like there is a little fat. I feel like there's some fat around the Alfred plea, and there's some fat leading. I mean, yeah, leading up to the Alfred plea and the oral arguments. I think those can be tightened up a little bit. Not a lot else you can tighten up in the film.
I didn't feel that was fat. I felt that you were playing the natural drama of it, leading up to the. I could feel the catharsis of the Alfred.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a couple of repetitive. Bits in there that you wouldn't notice, but
okay.
I mean, you might notice it now that you're seeing it the third time tonight. So there are just a couple things that you can tighten up. Not much, though.
There's not, and also just the parts that sort of relieve you from that constant, the despair and the just the hardness of the case. You wouldn't want to cut those because then you just couldn't bear it. But what I really love in this is
those represent Damien. That's what Damien's thinking and feeling when he's in prison. While all this is going on, he has this view of Arkansas, and that's why I shot so much of that stuff.
Yeah, you just couldn't cut it.
So. The thing is starting. I have to go inside.
All right.
March that. Can I get a shot of you for you here?
Yeah.